Look who's here. If you saw Sheer Madness, and if you're going to see The Odd Couple, it's Christopher Tarian.
Hello. Hello, Christopher. Hello. How
you Christopher's doing? Playing Oscar. I'm playing Felix, and we started on Tuesday. Chris, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. Other than the beer that's still soaking into me right now, it's going fine.
So he dumped a beer on somebody yesterday, huh?
Just a little bit.
He dumped a beer, yeah. Not on me, though. I was able to just watch it.
In slow motion, I'll bet, at that time. You just watch it slowly tumble.
Yeah, we got 500 people out there. John spills a beer, curses, and says, "I'll be right back."
Why did you say that? Why did you go off stage?
Because I had to, because my line to open the second act is an ice cold beer for Murray. And it's like, I didn't have one.
It was an ice cold beer on Murray. What it was. It was good, though. You know, it was, you know what, I was actually having a terrible first act, and this is the top of the second act. And that, for me, woke me up. And made me got me back on track. Of course, unfortunately, John suffered for it.
But, because I thought I had a brilliant first act. Yeah. And I was like, at intermission, I was like, it's going so well. And Chris is like, yeah, right.
I was a day late and a dollar short through the whole first act.
Let me ask you this. I mean, whenever you feel like you're on or you're not on or it's going really well or going poorly, I know that's yourself being hypercritical, but I don't know that the audience really knows if you're, you know, going good or not. I think they just don't know the script necessarily. They just think you guys are up there having fun and it's good.
Well, you know, when I say I'm
or was
not,
it that bad? I mean, you know.
No. There was nothing was smelling. Okay. But when I say I'm off, it's not necessarily like, gee whiz, I didn't say any lines for 10 minutes straight or anything like that. But it's just that sometimes you're just kind of a beat behind,
okay,
you know,
right.
And you feel like you're playing catch up. And then what happens as an actor is you get into this thing where you're sort of, you sort of pull back and watch yourself from above. You know what I mean? And then next thing you know, you're going, what am I doing with my hand? What is that? You know? And you're thinking, I probably shouldn't be doing that right now. And then you go, oh, that's my line. You know? Mm-hmm. And you sort of have that sort of a thing, you know?
That is a wild feeling.
No, it's out of body. And when you're out of body as an actor, you might as well just go off stage, come back on, like John did, and say, I'll be back in a minute. You know? It works.
So is this, is it going as good as you had hoped? I mean, John brought up a really good point last hour, and that is that these are characters that everybody's familiar with, which is not always the case when you're doing something. No. It's a story that everybody's familiar with, which, you know, the familiarity is a good thing on one hand, but it also brings a sense of responsibility to try to live up to that. It's got to be tough.
I mean, when I first got the role, you know, and it really wasn't one of those things where there was a long audition process. This was something that was born backstage at Sheer Madness. But when I first realized I was going to be playing a role and I started looking at the script, I couldn't get Jack Klugman out of my head. Mm-hmm. Could not shake him.
I know the feeling.
Is that true?
Some nights that some I'm nights, alone.
As you're falling asleep.
I can't get Jack Klugman out of my head.
Well, especially
head.
With his new voice. The thing is...
Poor guy.
No, he came and visited us. Have you guys talked about that?
No, yeah, we didn't really talk about it.
He came and saw us, and he was really generous.
Yeah, I think John brought that up last time.
Kind.
So
yeah,
he was very generous, is what John said, and he was also very flattering, too.
Yeah, and he told me, he said, I went into the show in New York, and he said, and I watched Walter Matthau. You know, and he said, and I sat there and watched him for six performances. And he said, I watched him for six performances. And I was thinking, how can I beat this guy? How can I beat this guy? And then he started talking about a moment in the show that he thought was the heart of the show. And I'm thinking, I heard he have this circled in my script. And he said, and that's, you know, and he swore. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, so I'm wrong is what you're telling me? And it turned out he just had a more passionate idea about it. But that Neil Simon used to argue with him and say, what are we doing? Death of a Salesman? Get through this.
Right.
But after time and through rehearsal, I've lost that, and you know he's starting to sound familiar to me. You know, Oscar is starting to sound like me,
and it's great fun because Chris and I have known each other 13 years, and we've done Sheer Madness in three or four cities together. We've done, and it's so great to be in another project and to be playing like the best friend of somebody who is really like your best friend. It's really been a joy to be able to go through this process. And I resent Chris quite a bit because we started this process and Chris comes in like with all of his lines memorized.
Oh God.
And I'm like, oh my God. So we're going through this and Chris has his book to his side as I'm like, I hate you.
All I knew was the last word of every line. Yeah, yeah. So John thought I was off book. The fact was I just had it in my back pocket. I wasn't really off book.
How do you do that? I mean, I am amazed that you guys can do that. Any actor.
You know, you read it a lot. I mean, that's really what it starts. I think most people don't read anything as much as an actor does when you start to look at a script. And when you read something, it starts to...
Over and over and over.
It starts to, you know, that's what I do anyway. I read it a lot. And then all of a sudden, you can't do the lines without the blocking. And for those viewers who don't know what blocking is, that's the actual movement on stage when you go, you know, over left, go sit down, pick up a cup, do whatever. And then you get to the point where you're off stage trying to run a scene, but you're not in the furniture and doing the movements and you can't remember your lines. You're like, what? Oh, wait a minute.
Ever had a line from like another thing that you had just finished doing sneak into something you're presently doing or, you know, vice versa? No?
You know, it's funny how stuff stays. Like, I could do Fully Committed tomorrow. If I had like an hour that I could sit down with the book, we could do Sheer Madness. I haven't done Sheer Madness. It'll be 2 years that I haven't done Sheer Madness.
Are you kidding?
Soon. It'll be 2 years. And I could, you know, I said to Chris the other day, I said, I'm going to have to go back into rehearsal for Sheer Madness. He was like, no, you won't.
No, he'll be fine. One run through and he'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, and it stays up there. But you don't really get confused with what's going on. You know, the Odd Couple now. Now we'll be in there, you know, it's like something in your back pocket that'll never, you know, unless you really can't throw it away.
Have you ever had those moments of sheer blank? And I'm not just talking about a line, but where all of a sudden it's like, I am completely blank. I don't even know what I'm doing on this stage.
I did Tuesday.
No. No, never.
I mean, whereas I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, I would think panic would just set in where it's like, okay, crap, and you're going through the files in your head trying to find something.
Everybody has their own way of handling it when they go blank, and there's nothing scarier than going blank on something that you know like the back of your hand. Like, if we go blank, if John or I go blank in Sheer Madness, I mean, something like that, that's the most horrifying in the world. Most horrifying thing in the world, because that's like your head being on fire, because you're like, well, how could I possibly not remember this? I'll tell you what John does. John grabs the furniture.
Okay.
When John goes up, he starts hanging on to the set, and he starts grabbing the furniture in the wall. And then that way I know he's in trouble.
It's like an earthquake.
Although there's nothing scarier. When you're an actor, so what's scarier than going blank is being someone on the stage and watching somebody else go blank.
Oh.
Because then you know that if they don't have it, you've got to come up with something to carry it.
And then you try to offer them something and they say no.
No.
You're like, weren't you thinking about coming over here? And they're like,
no. Wasn't thinking about that.
Not what I was going to do.
We've got one of the Pigeon sisters, Tammy Workington, and Mary McDonald Care. Mary McDonald Care, everybody knows as Barbara. And Tammy was the Barbara, the replacement Barbara last year. But Tammy, tell the story of Tammy on stage.
Tammy's got you know, also another thing John does is he has this thing where he says, what would you say if you were me right now?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a line.
Said that earlier.
And Tammy gets on there, and when she's cooking, she'll get into a spot, and if she doesn't know what's going on, she'll just look at you and say, I got nothing. And so then everybody on stage knows, okay, she's done, where the audience won't necessarily know. So I've shared that with other people throughout time. It's like, listen, if you get in trouble, say, I got nothing. I was doing Sheer Madness at the Kennedy Center with a brand new guy playing Tony. And I'm trying to work on my contract, so I never do it with anybody but John. But I don't have quite as much juice as he does just yet. And this guy was going in, and I said, don't worry, we got you. You know, there's all these guys who've done the show a million times. Just when you get out there, if you get in trouble, just say, I got nothing. And so we get to his, like, second line, and he's like, yeah, I went over here, and I got nothing. And I was like, oh, man, we are in for it.
You're in for a whole night of nothing.
It's not your new line, you know? I mean, this is when you're in trouble.
And then what else you got going on?
We've got Gilda's Club coming on the 28th. Monday the 28th, it's an evening with John McGivern. It's hors d'oeuvres and wine and cocktails at the Marcus Center Bradley Pavilion. Then we'll go down to Vogel Hall, and I'll do an hour and a half of material of the stuff that I do. My storytelling will do.
No way.
For, yeah. Yeah.
After the show?
You think? Chris is so funny because Chris is like, Chris says, well, what do you got going tonight? Well, I suppose this is how you'll open it up. Hi, people who work with employee assistants. My mother. He's just like, everything I do is
he's
about
always like,
my
oh,
mom.
I'm going to go do this thing for the such and such electrical coalition of people who save money to save little birds. And I'll be like, well, okay, what are you going to do? He's like, I don't know. And then I say, well, you're like, you'll come in, you'll say, hi, I'm John McGivern, and thank you very much for having me here at the People for Early Electrical Coalition that save young birds. You know, my mother loves young birds. I've worked a lot of John's shows with him and stage managed for him and told him to stop giving tickets away a lot of times. Well, we used to do these little 100, you know, 70-seat places after the show in San Francisco and all these places, and I'd be stage managing, technically designing, and running his box office. It was goofy. But and then, you know, he'd come to me and gave, well, I gave away like 35 comps. It's like, John, yeah. 35 comps. That's half your house. Stop it. Just stop it right now. But the brilliant thing about John is that he's fearless. You know, he's fearless. He goes out there and he does not expect to. He's not afraid of failing. If you're not afraid of failing, you probably won't.
All right, you guys, The Odd Couple. You got to go see these guys in The Odd Couple. And once again,
it's 273-7206 is the box office number. 273-7206. Yeah. The people over there are going to be like, you don't even know the box office number. Yeah. You're such a
Earl good Dotson 06.
And we got Norman Moses, David Cesarini, John Kishline, Jonathan West,
Mary McDonald Kerr, Tammy Workington. And Chris and I, it's a
I can't
local
wait to see it. Yeah, it's going to be a fun
great
show.
Great cast. Yeah.
We're already making up our signs.
I do. I have my I Love Chris sign.
Well, when you
since you're, you never get the props that you do, so I got love I Love Chris.
Thank you so much. We're going to name the Pigeon Sisters the night KLH is there. Really? Dave and Carol Pigeon. We're trying to figure out the way to work some promos into the show.
Well, we are, and it's funny because RBC, Dane Rosher, and Funjet are our sponsors. Oh. So, of course, they call and say, well, can you wear an RBC
T-shirt.
It's like, it's 1965.
This is not sheer madness. We're not going to take a vote. We're not going to let you ask questions.
Get me a coffee cup, though, with any of your logo. We'll put that on the stage.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, that's how it works.
I don't know.
In 1965, it wouldn't even have been classic rock. It would have been brand new.
Just rock, yeah.
All it would have been the rock.
And tomorrow night, if you could plan to spill a beer in my direction, because usually I get thirsty about halfway through.
Are you coming tomorrow night?
Yeah. Lou and I are coming.
My fiance's going to be there tomorrow night. She's coming
really
to town.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Be nice to meet. I'm getting married.
Well, congratulations.
September 20th. I'm in the wedding party.
John's in the wedding party.
It's myself, our friend Matt Callahan, Bruce Jordan, three gay guys who are 50.
And Robin's brother.
And Robin's brother.
Who's 6'5" and very quiet.
Well, he's pretty much got an open shot at all the bridesmaids now, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. John was going to be my best man, and I saw the sweat start beating up on his forehead.
Please don't.
So I said, okay, the three of you, just come up with something to say when the toast happens. Yeah.
And, of course, they picked out the tux like a year ago. So I went out and bought the tux. So I've been doing all these events that I've had to wear the tux, and Chris is like, your tux is going to be, like, off black.
It's going to be frayed.
You have worn the tux that I needed for my wedding.
Who's the guy in the hobo tux?
No, it's a homo tux. Homo tux.
That toast is going to be like the gay equivalent of the three tenors.
Well, think about my bachelor party.
You'll be the only
very well decorated.
And the food will be fabulous.
A lot of smart cocktails and some finger food.
And all of a sudden, a policeman with a boombox shows up.
Exactly. Mr. Tarion, you're under arrest. Down, down, down. Robin would probably be okay with that.
All right, you guys, thanks for coming in.